was 2 weeks ago, that Stephen A. Smith glowingly spoke about the Phoenix Suns.
The Western Conference has a whole lot of storylines, but it's time. Long past time.
It's time
to give the Phoenix Suns some shine, too. Because while we're talking about everybody else, the Suns have made a run to second place in the Western Conference. Winners in 13 of the last 16 games. Just 3 games back of the Utah Jazz. And understand, this team is legit across the board.
He yelled.
And 2 weeks later.
And 2 weeks later, Stephen A. Smith on First Take Today. 2 weeks later.
Not to me, not yet. They have elite play at the point guard spot. They have a star in Devin Booker who's emerging as a superstar. I love the development of DeAndre Ayton. And I love Monty Williams and his coaching staff. I know all of those guys. The Willie Greens of the world, the Randy Ayers of the world, the Monty Williams. I love those guys. And I'm very, very proud of the job that they're doing. I just get this feeling like they're just a piece away. Just a piece away.
Yeah, the question he was asked at the beginning, I should have set it up better. Are the Suns a true contender? And his answer was...
Not to me, not yet.
Okay. So...
Which is, okay, on the surface, okay, not yet. He's not... I mean, just saying they're not a contender. A contender, I mean, there's only one way to your contender is you have a chance to win a championship. Now, a lot of people think that they do have a chance to win a championship, and Vegas odds are actually not too bad that they can win a championship. But 2 weeks ago, I mean, it sounded like he was saying that they're a serious contender. Watch out for them. They could win it all. And now he's saying not yet. I almost think that sometimes a lot of these national guys, they don't, you know, especially when they talk about Phoenix, they don't remember what the last thing they said was. did I talk about the Suns 2 weeks ago? What did I say about the Suns 2 weeks ago? Do you guys remember? I can't remember. Are the Suns a contender? No, they're not a contender. They're too young.
He should be able to remember what he said 2 weeks ago. It was passionate. It was strong. It was. But I understand what you're saying. I think Stephen A. is actually onto something, as strange as it sounds. They're missing a piece. They're missing a piece. And at first we heard that. What? Who is that piece? I mean, a player? A position? No, the piece... It sounds like he's not a player. The piece is the experience of contending for a championship.
Ayton's young. Booker's young. He hasn't been in the playoffs yet. Mikal Bridges, young. Talented, but young. You know, I know Jay Crowder's a big pickup for them. CP3 told me he's been raving about him all year long. But I still believe they're just a piece away.
When you frame it like that, piece isn't a guy. A piece is a what? A piece is not a who. A piece is a what.
Is usually a guy, though.
Usually, yeah. Usually when you say piece,
they're one more guy away.
Right. You
one
think
piece
something
away.
Kind of tangibly, right? Okay. You're thinking about a person. You're thinking about a player. You're thinking about a position. He's not describing that. He's describing a piece as experience. And in that regard, it is fair to wonder. Devin Booker, Mikal Bridges, DeAndre Ayton, Cam Johnson. They've never been through a 7-game series.
No.
They don't know that there is a question about their experience and how they're going to react. We just don't know until we get there.
And it's impossible to talk about it. There is plenty of playoff experience, though, right? Jay Crowder's got a lot of games.
Tons.
Chris Paul's got games. By the way, Torrey Craig, 33 playoff games.
Yep.
Was in the Western Conference Finals last year. You know, so he's got a lot of playoff experience. Campaign's got playoff experience. Dario Saric has playoff experience.
Yeah.
So now you may say that, I mean, it's something. I mean, something's better than nothing.
Sure.
Okay, a year. Okay, if the Suns play 10 games in the playoffs this year, 10 games, are we going to go into next year saying Booker doesn't have any playoff experience?
Oh, no. We'll say he has.
No. Okay, so Saric has experience. Payne has experience.
But,
Craig has experience.
But you know the counter argument here. We're talking about Booker. We're talking about Ayton.
Right.
We're talking about Bridges.
No,
we're talking about 3 of your 5 main guys who have zero experience.
I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
And that's...
I mean, I think it's a factor. Like, when you're looking at intangibles, why you would pick one team over another, you might say the lack of playoff experience is a reason I won't pick Phoenix. It doesn't mean that Suns can't win a series.
Oh, no, not at all.
It doesn't mean that. It is a little bit of an intangible for the other team if they have experience, more experience than the Suns
have. We asked James Jones about this when he was on for his weekly visit with us. His reaction to those who say Phoenix doesn't have playoff experience. Remember, James Jones is a guy who has a ton of playoff experience as a player.
I really don't care what they think. It is true. Our guys, our core guys, they don't have playoff experience. Do I think that means that they won't have success in the playoffs? Not at all. You know, this is a different year. We have a play-in tournament. We're playing during the year of COVID. What I do know is that our guys are fearless. And so – that actually can help us as we get into the playoffs, because you can't assume because you've been there before, that's going to help you have success going forward. You know, you have to play well, you have to be healthy. I think the Miami Heat last year showed with the team, and the team we beat last night, they had a really good run last year. They made it to the finals with rookies and second-year players in their rotation. So I won't look at, you know, our lack of playoff experience as a negative. I actually look at it as an opportunity to prove, you know, people's general theory wrong.
Now, just for comparison's sake, and just for no other reason other than that, I was looking at a story today on The Athletic kind of ranking some of the teams in the Western Conference after the Jamal Murray injury. And in the write-up about the Utah Jazz, they write, this is an explosive and experienced team with top six players in minutes played having made at least three postseason appearances in their career. Three for Mitchell, three for Royce O'Neal, four for Gobert, four for Bogdanovich, seven for Mike Conley, four for Joe Ingles. And you can add two playoff appearances for Jordan Clarkson as well. That's a very experienced team.
Yes.
Does that mean the Utah Jazz are better than the Suns, or more likely to win than the Suns?
It gives them an advantage there, but there's advantages everywhere. Who's got a better coach? Who has a better bench? You know, who's healthier?
Who's coming in hot?
There's all these factors. So who's a better three-point shooting team? Absolutely. Who's a better rebounding team? There's all these factors. The experience is only one factor. It doesn't determine whether you win or lose. It's a good factor to have. I'd rather have it than not have it.
Yeah, I would too.
Like, I would rather have it than not have it, but I don't think that's the... it could be the reason that they lose. I mean, it could be. It could be the reason they lose. They have just enough guys that haven't been there. But I don't think that ultimately determines the series.
I don't either, but I liked what you said about it earlier. It does matter, and here's the reason why. If you've never experienced a seven-game series where you're playing the same team seven times, right?
And they haven't.
And the adjustments and the counter-adjustments and the moves and the counter-moves, that's where the experience helps you a little bit, because you understand. I mean, anybody who's watched an NBA playoff series knows it evolves and it changes, and game two isn't the same as game four, and game four isn't the same as game six.
Well, would a young guy press if they lose game one by 13, 14 points? Would he press in game two? Oh, my God, we can't go down 2-0. And would he press? And would he all? You just don't know. We don't know how guys are going to react. Some guys might, you know, be up to the challenge, and it's not just another game. Like, it's just not. Anybody tells you that, it's not just another game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a playoff game. The intensity, everything dials up a whole bunch of notches. Nobody can say, it's just a game. It's not. It's different than that. Chris Paul has been bracing for this all year. When they won a game the other day against the Jazz. Yeah, it's a nice win. I like it, but it's not like we won a series. Okay? I mean, I got to tell you everything you need to know. Like, that's just a regular season game. It's not that big of a deal.
But he also said after that game, I'm glad we played a game like this, because I've been pushing Monty to play the starters more minutes to get us ready.
But he said it's not a series. It's not a play. It's not like winning a playoff series.
And that's why I keep saying this. I'm looking forward to that seven-game stretch that starts next week.
When they play the Clippers?
When they play the Bucks,
Celtics.
And the Celtics and the Sixers and the Nets and the Knicks and the Clippers and the Jazz. Seven games in a row that almost mimics a playoff series, right?
I mean, not exactly,
but you know what I mean. Seven high-intensity, high-quality games. I want to see how the Suns do over the course of those seven games and see their level of readiness for the postseason based off of those seven games.
Utah was a quality team. They won. Clippers were a quality team. They lost. I still think Miami's a quality team. The record may not show it, but they pounded Miami twice, both times they played them.
Yep, they did.
That's a good team.
Join Ron Wolfley on the eve of the draft. The Cardinals getting ready to make their first round selection. Text the word draft to 620-620. You'll get an invitation to the exclusive Arizona Sports Valley virtual draft experience featuring Wolf and other football guests. Again, text draft to 620-620. The Valley virtual series is presented by 72 Sold. Get your price, and that's going to take place on the eve of the NFL draft, which is 2 weeks from tonight. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, we have all been waiting and bracing for a decision from Larry Fitzgerald, and we're still waiting and we're still bracing. When it comes to the actual on-field product, how much will he be missed if he retires? An interesting thought on that next on the Burns and Gambo show. All right, I'm going to cop to it right now here on the Burns and Gambo show. I did not write down our picks, our latest round of picks for Larry Fitzgerald. Larry! Or if I did, I didn't save that.
Oh, Jordy did.
I thought you did, because didn't you out loud write down, and Burnsy says.
I did. I referred to myself by nickname in the third person, but I did not.
I got it here.
You got it? Okay, yeah. Please.
Burnsy, you had the 18th. I had the 20th. Gambo has the 21st, and Sarah has the 23rd.
All right, everybody's still alive. No one's had a date that's passed yet, right?
No, that's all next week, starting next Sunday.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Because now I remember, we based it around the golf tournament.
Yeah.
We already announced it at the golf tournament, Bruce Arians' golf tournament in Florida, the one that they used Larry Fitzgerald's likeness to promote, which got everybody wondering exactly what the hell that was all about. All right, Jordan, thank you for writing that down. We can always count on Jordan to be the responsible one, right? It's nice to have a grown-up in the room.
I mean, can the Cardinals give him a $7 million contract right now? No.
No.
And he's not playing for $1.5 million with incentives.
He's not playing for the veterans minimum. I can't imagine. No,
he's not coming back to the Cardinals.
Well, just one thing. Haven't we seen that you can get creative with the fight? So it's not like he would have a $7 million cap hit. They could add voidable years, and in the grand scheme of things, it's a $2 million or whatever, however.
Hypothetically, could they create cap space to bring him back? Yes. At this point, does it seem like something going to happen to Gambo's point? No, it doesn't. At this point, though, it does feel like the one thing that we can absolutely rule out is his return to the Arizona Cardinals, right? Everything else kind of feels like maybe it's still on the table. Does he retire? Maybe. Does he go somewhere to chase a ring, in particular Tampa Bay? Maybe.
So the third option is coming back to the Cardinals.
The returning to the Cardinals, that just feels like a no. Like, that's the one thing that it feels like you can take a black Sharpie and draw a line through that possibility on your piece of paper. That doesn't feel like it's going to happen.
It doesn't.
I want to share with you, and I emailed this to you, the line just stuck in my head, and I thought, oh, we got to talk about this. This is an interesting way to present this. It was on NFL.com, NFC West roster reset. And what they basically did at NFL.com was they took the four teams in the NFC West, and they said, here's the biggest addition, here's the biggest loss, here's what their draft priority is. Here's some final thoughts on the team. Did it for the Rams, the Seahawks, the Niners, and of course the Cardinals.
Okay.
Biggest addition was Rodney Hudson, not J.J. Watt, which you and I would both agree with.
Yes.
Biggest loss was Hassan Reddick. Okay. Top draft priority, cornerback. You bet. Final thoughts. Here's where I thought it was interesting. Should Larry Fitzgerald retire, it would be a bigger loss for the league than his team at this point. And that line,
it's interesting. Why would you think it's a loss for the league? Because of just, man of the year, what he's meant.
Yeah.
I would say yes if he doesn't decide to stay in the game in some capacity. Like, if Larry Fitzgerald goes to the booth and he's still in football somehow involved, I still think that's, that's.
Okay.
I mean, Tony Romo's still involved in the NFL. Do we have to, Tony Romo's around all the time. Every week he's around, right? So maybe, but yeah, I don't think it's a big loss for the Cardinals on the field. I mean, he hasn't produced. And part of that could be because of the offense and everything. I still think he's very capable of producing, even at his age, but he just hasn't. So you're not going to miss the production on the field. That's, you're just not going to.
Jordan, were you going to jump in on this one? You look like you were ready to.
No.
Oh, no. Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. You had the headphones on. I thought maybe you were going to jump in on this one. Yeah. I think you're spot on. He can still be a part of the, like Drew Brees, he's retired. He's still going to be a part of the game.
Yeah.
He's still very much going to be around the NFL. He'll be a
presence.
Have
you missed Kurt Warner?
He's very much around the NFL.
He's all around the NFL.
Yep.
I mean, so you miss him as a player, but they're around.
Yeah.
You still get all the great insight from Kurt Warner and breaking down quarterbacks and plays and defenses and stuff like that. So he's around.
Yeah.
So I think if Fitz ends up with one of those gigs, he'll be around. Now, if he just disappears and just goes away and then all of a sudden he's not around, Randy Johnson and Luis Gonzalez, those guys, they're around. you miss them playing, but they're around.
Yeah, not. I mean,
they're around.
You go to a game, you'll see Randy sitting there. You go to a game, you'll see Luis sitting there. We'll have Luis on the show from time to time. We've had Randy on the show from time to time, but I mean, not to the level like Kurt Warner is around. I mean, Kurt Warner's around. He's on all of our shows all the time, and we love him for it. And he's on NFL Network all the time. He's calling games on Westwood One and all that. But I understand the point that you're trying to make, and I loved that kind of thought that it would be a bigger loss for the league than it would for his team, because his team, now maybe his team, maybe Larry Fitzgerald said, look, guys, I'm not coming back. Okay. Move on without me. Do what you need to do. Sign who you need to sign. Spend what you need to spend. I'm not coming back. But the Cardinals, based off of their actions, how they've acted this offseason, they have acted like they know Larry Fitzgerald is not coming back to them. Like right. We're moving on. Going in a different direction.
And they have to know. They're just not, like, they have to
they
know.
They have to know.
Because if they wanted him back, they would be holding a spot. You know, you would
yes.
go sign A.J. Green, and you wouldn't be worried about looking at as much at the wide receiver, maybe. If you signed Green, you're having Fitz coming back, you got Hopkins
yeah.
and the draft. I expect that he's going to retire, and I've always said that. I've never really wavered from that he's going to retire. I think he retires. Even when the Minnesota thing came up and the Bucks thing came up, and Just can't see him playing for anybody else.
I've wavered
a little bit. I don't blame you for that.
On the Bucks thing, the Vikings thing, I never bought. The Bucks thing, I've wavered on whether he would play for the Bucks or not, and I still wonder if they're holding a spot for him. Though I was thinking about that too in a different light with this Julian Edelman thing. He retired a couple days ago from the New England Patriots, right? Did you see Rob Gronkowski's comments on Edelman retired? Gronk doesn't think he's retired. Gronk's like, oh, yeah, I think there's like a 70% chance he actually used 69, but I think there's a 69% chance he comes back and plays. And there's this belief
really?
Out there. Yeah.
Why?
There's this go play with Brady. Go play. Yeah, well, one more shot.
We'll get somebody hurt in your camp and it will sign you and you come play.
And it's mostly been fueled by ProFootballTalk.com. So I'll admit that's kind of where I'm getting this from. But there's sort of been this question, is Julian Edelman really retired? Rob Gronkowski's been on the record as saying he thinks there's a chance that Edelman decides to come back and play.
Even with that heartfelt, dramatic video that went on social media.
I'm just telling you what some people are out there suggesting. I know it because it was heartfelt. It was sincere. It felt real.
Very intense.
Very intense.
Not like he hasn't won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Just a couple.
But it's not like Tom Brady had neither, and yet that didn't stop him from wanting as many as he could possibly.
And Gronk, too. He would know.
Yeah.
Brady's just wired differently than anybody else in the world.
I don't know. I'm just telling you what people have been, what Pro Football Talk has kind of been suggesting out there through their own words and through Rob Gronkowski's words. And if so, maybe that spot they were holding for Fitz, maybe instead of holding it for Julian Edelman.
So basically, we have a spot for an old player that wants to play with Tom Brady exactly. and Tom likes.
To arm wrestle for it. Julian Edelman and Larry Fitzgerald. Two men enter, one man leaves. Whoever comes out of that room wins the spot.
Don't hurt yourself, though. Let's play shuffleboard instead.
Well, I was going to say, Antonio Brown, whatever the game is in the corner waiting for his turn.
Oh, gosh, ready to throw his shoe at
them.
Right. Yeah.
We're going
to
go Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome to see who gets the one wide receiver spot for the New England Patriots.
Eventually we'll talk to Larry at some point. Why is it taking so long?
Yeah.
Like, I just... No, whatever you decide, man. We'll support you. Everybody will support you, whatever your decision is. Even if you go play somewhere else. But just why is it taking so long?
I agree. 100%.
You got to know what you're going to do. You have to know what you're going to do.
When we hear from Larry, that's going to be like the number one question we're going to want to know, right? What took you so long?
Yeah, why?
Why the delay? Yeah.
If we say, hey, when did you realize this, that you weren't going to come back? Oh, well, yeah, I knew early in the season. Okay. Why did you wait January, February, March, April? Why did it take so long to announce that you weren't going to come back?
Over the last few weeks, DeAndre Ayton has been more consistent. He's been more aggressive. What's been the reason for his growth? And can it continue, this growth? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, Wednesday afternoon edition, Burns and Gambo Show. Suns not in action again until tomorrow after the back-to-back games and the back-to-back wins. And if we're talking about last night's game, and we won't spend a ton of time like reliving last night's game, there's no doubt the number one story coming out of last night's game was the bench.
Well, they outscored the starters, what, 65 to 41 or something like that?
Yeah.
They really outscored. No, the bench was a great was the great factor, the main factor in them winning that game. Booker, Paul, and Mikal Bridges combined for 17 points. Mikal had none. Chris had four. 17 points total. So the bench was the really, and DeAndre Ayton had a very good game as one of the starters, but Jay Crowder didn't really do anything. It was the bench that won him that game.
And that's where I was going to transition this to, is that, okay, the bench was probably the top story last night, and DeAndre Ayton, if the bench was one, DeAndre Ayton was 1A in terms of last night's game, because once again, Ayton was phenomenal.
And Adebayo will swing it over on the side to Jimmy Butler. He's their leading scorer. He's their go-to guy when it gets down to crunch time. He'll drive into the lane. His shot's rejected. Nice block by DeAndre Ayton.
Now, look, I know we've played these, not these parts on this show, but the way we've talked about DeAndre Ayton all season long, you have been very firmly in the camp of give it time, be patient. He's going to be great. Yeah. He's good now. He's really going to be. And I've been a little more, man, I want some consistency. I want better effort. I want a little more. I want this. I want that. I never advocated trading him, not for one second. But I did want a greater, more consistent effort out of DeAndre Ayton night to night. I will tell you, these last 3 weeks or so, and I couldn't even pinpoint the game. It's just this general kind of last 2 or 3 weeks. DeAndre Ayton has played phenomenally. Phenomenally. I mean,
on both ends.
On both ends.
There's been plenty of games where he played phenomenally on a defensive end, but the offensive end left a lot to be desired, and that's where a lot of the criticism would come
yes,
in.
Yes, because he was, and I'm not saying it's fixed. I'm not suggesting for a second that this is done, but the criticism was because he was passive. The criticism was because he settled for too many jumpers. Because
kicked it out to the three-point line.
Kicked it out too often. He didn't attack the rim enough. He wasn't using his physicality. He was fumbling the ball a lot. Those are things I don't think about that much anymore.
Nope.
I mean, it's you watch him play, and yeah, will he have the occasional? Yes, of course he will. He's playing with a different level of aggression these last few weeks, and it's just been great to see.
Coaching and experience. I had a guy say to tweet me 5 hours ago, want to say that I thought you were out of your mind when you would defend Ayton and said he had to grow. I thought he was a goner for sure, but it's starting to look like you're right. Look, I think he's going to be a great player. I think he's a really good player. I thought it was really in, like, the insanity for me was like, trade him for Karl Anthony Towns, trade him for the, man, if people that wanted to get rid of Ayton, they'd be like, why? He's 22 years old. He's an elite defensive rebounder. He's a very good defensive player. And he's only going to get better. I mean, he's just going to get better. The player he is today is not the player he'll be even a year from now. He's eventually, I mean, he is a core piece to what they want to do. I never understood that, you know, go, and there were some people, there were other centers out there too, trade Ayton for that guy and go for it this year. I just never really bought that. And it was also like, if you trade Ayton and you go for it now and you win, it's worth it, even if Ayton's going to be great for the next 10 years. I was never in that camp.
Yeah, his teammates are starting to believe it too. Chris Paul last night just heaping all sorts of praise on DeAndre Ayton.
DA been amazing these past few games, pretty much all season, but he's been a little bit more aggressive. The last, I don't know how many games, me and some of the guys were just talking about it in the locker room, and it's great to see. You know, he's a big, big part of our team, and anything that we're going to do going forward, he's the anchor of the defense. And then when he's aggressive offensively, it opens up everything. So we're going to keep leaning on him, and it's great to see.
See, and I guess for me, and I can't speak for every single Suns fan here, and again, I never advocated trading him for anybody else. I think for me, it was a question, and we've had this conversation a lot about the Suns, not just about Ayton, but about the Suns in general. I was getting tired of the, okay, just wait and see. DeAndre Ayton a couple years from now is going to be great.
You wanted it now.
You needed it now. It wasn't even wanting it now. It was needing it now.
But you needed the defense. You didn't need the offense. They were winning plenty of games without the offense.
They were. But for them to be as good as they can possibly be this year, they did need the offense too, right? They this version of him, because you think about what happened last night. Booker was awful. Chris Paul was not really a factor. Mikal Bridges really wasn't much of a factor offensively. Didn't score last night. They needed his offense. They needed his aggression on the offensive side to help them win that basketball game. The bench had a big hand in that too. I didn't want to wait for DeAndre Ayton And okay, potential. The Suns needed him now to fulfill this version of themselves now. And I didn't want to wait for that anymore. They needed to see it now. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You may not know this offhand. What did the Suns? I'm going to look it up. What the Suns shot from 3-point range last night? Because without the Andre's offense, this was very much a live by the three, die by the three team.
They were 13 of 42, 31% last night.
Okay, they were okay. That's okay.
It's okay.
It's all right. I mean, that's not bad. The Heat were 20%. They were 9 of 44. But you don't have to like Jay Crowder was 1 of 6 from 3-point range. Mikhail was 0 of 2. Booker was 1 of 8, and they won the basketball game.
The starters were 3 of 19
from 3-point range.
3-point line last
night. But DeAndre Ayton was 8 of 10 from the field. He had 19 points.
Yeah.
So like you in the past, it was live and die with the three, and the past means this year. Now you feel like you could win some games if you don't shoot the ball well from three because Ayton's going to get you a lot of those easy buckets.
Well, and not just
he might get you 18 points inside.
Yeah, and that's not just an Ayton thing too. That's also a Booker thing. That's also a drive the rim thing. That's a Mikal Bridges drive the rim kind of thing. I mean, it's Ayton kind of in part playing along with that, setting the tone with that. But that's an all around thing for the Suns. I think. James Jones was on with us earlier, and he said, we asked him, is Ayton playing up to the level that you were hoping for? Here's what he said.
He's getting there. I'm excited and thrilled, encouraged by his consistency and his impact. He's been extremely impactful on both sides of the ball, especially recently. And I think you start to see when he figures it out, when he finds his place in the offense, it comes effortlessly. But, you know, his defense of impact, you know, his activity, it fuels our team. And I expect that as he continues to have more and more success, you'll see him improve. Because that's his arc. And for us to be a good team, he knows we need him to be that type of player.
I made a prediction on yesterday's show, and I'm going to stand by it. It's now 6 straight games of double-digit field goal attempts for DeAndre Ayton.
Yes.
I bet he only has 1 or 2 games the rest of the season where he falls into single digits.
If he doesn't get it, it's very likely that it's a game that they're resting him or that they got a big lead and they're not going to play the starters a whole lot. But that's the largest stretch that he's had this year is 6 straight games. He did it once before. It was earlier in the season, I think in January. 6 straight games with double-digit field goal attempts. This is so the next one, that's the most he's had this year.
Yep.
But that's, there were certain games earlier this year where he was getting 6 shots a game or 5 shots a game or 7 shots a game. And 8. I was like, they're not getting the ball. I think it's also an indicator that they trust him a lot more, too.
Agreed.
That he's getting these shots.
Totally agree.
Because he doesn't take the ball up the court. The only way he's getting the ball is if somebody passes it to him.
Yeah. Well, what was that old line that Mike D'Antoni used to say? The ball finds energy. Right? Wasn't that a big Mike D'Antoni line?
The ball finds the energy.
Like if he keeps playing with this intensity, this aggression, the ball's going to find him, right? It's going to find him.
Yeah.
It's whether it's Chris Paul, Devin Booker, whomever, the ball is going to find a way in its hands if he keeps doing good things with us like this. He'll get those 10 shots per game. I bet there's only 1 or 2 games the rest of the season where he's in single digits. I think they've stumbled upon how this is going to work for them.
I think they also realize that there's games in the playoffs they're going to need 18, 20 points from him.
Absolutely.
And, against good teams and, that have good, good defensive play on the guards, they're going to need him. So I think that this is still a work in progress over the next couple of weeks to make sure that he's ready for those games.
It is obvious something is not right with Madison Bumgarner. Does he have the ability to alter his game the way another previous high-priced Diamondbacks ace did? Because the whole contract might rest on that very question. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Time for the Coors Seltzer. What's on tonight? Brought to you by Coors Seltzer. When you drink a Coors Seltzer, you help save the Salt River. No local teams in action tonight. Suns off night. D-backs, it was a travel day. They open up a series against the Nationals tomorrow. The Coyotes have already played. The Coyotes have already lost. Coyotes are in trouble.
I mean, that top player has been out forever.
I know, but
they don't have any leadership on this team.
But they were hanging in there for a while, right?
They were.
And they're taking on some water with this, what, now 5-game losing
streak? Well, the Blues have been winning. Yeah, they played good teams, though. I mean, Vegas and in Colorado and the Minnesota. Minnesota's been really good. They've beaten the Coyotes up this year. Aiden Hill is the third-string goalie. He's had to play a lot because Antti Raanta is always hurt. Like, he always gets hurt. And then Darcy Kemper's been out, and Darcy Kemper's had a setback. He's not ready. It's, you know, you're bringing a knife to a gunfight. I mean, you're playing with a third-string goalie, a fourth-string goalie. I mean, the kid that played the other day, he's your fourth-string goalie.
Yeah. Huge.
Right, Raanta comes back, and he's terrible.
Huge, huge game coming up on Saturday against the St. Louis Blues. The whole season might come down to that game right there.
St. Louis is ahead of them, and they've got three games in hand, I think.
Yeah, I believe it's three games in hand. Yeah, I mean, that's a tough situation for the... I mean, I think it was Goligoski who was asked today. Craig Morgan tweeted this out. Is Saturday's game against St. Louis must win? And he said, yeah, pretty much. It's pretty much
They didn't do anything at the trade deadline. It was some interest in Garland and Goligoski, but not enough to trade them. I expect that they'll be busy in the summer. They got to move some of these players out.
Yeah, none of the local teams in action tonight. Sorry, that was a long roundabout way of saying that. What is on tonight, if you're scoreboard watching in the NBA's Western Conference, there are a few games of interest tonight to keep an eye on there, and that includes the Clippers, who are currently leading the Detroit Pistons 42-36. That game is in the second quarter. Also, 1.5 minutes to go in the third quarter. Big game in the Eastern Conference, though the Nets are missing a bunch of guys. The Sixers are beating the Nets 89-79. And then later tonight, the Heat, just beaten by the Suns last night. They're in Denver tonight, but that's a rough back-to-back for Miami. Suns and then Nuggets.
Yep.
Even with the Jamal Murray injury, Nuggets Heat coming up later tonight. So, scoreboard watching the Suns. Baseball, of course, if that's your thing. You want to watch the Major League Baseball, not the Arizona Diamondbacks. That's on tonight as well.
I saw that Johnny Cueto came out of the game today.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah. Did he come out of the game? Did you see that?
Yeah, apparently he was pitching really well in today's outing, but he came out.
I saw him come out with an injury. So.
I did not see that.
Yeah, it's going to be a big blow for the Giants.
Speaking of the Nuggets, by the way, it sounds like Austin Rivers is in contract talks to join the Nuggets. He would not be eligible for the postseason roster, but they would be obviously signing him to try to help get them there with the loss of Jamal Murray. So he's been available ever since he was part of a three-team trade.
I want to see how they play now that they got the news. Yeah. I mean, Heat are on a back-to-back, but, you know, that's got to be, you know, shocking to those players when a guy like that goes down, one of your key players, one of your top two players. It's just, yeah, I want to see how they respond.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Madison Bumgarner.
Oh.
How is he going to respond? His next start, what do we decide, Sunday?
Sunday against the Nationals against Steven Strasburg.
Yep, and it's going to be like this every single start. Now, for Madison Bumgarner, we're going to be looking to see, because you've said this a couple times now, and you're 100% right. Eventually, he's going to have a good start.
Yes.
Eventually, he's going to
have a few of them.
He's going to have success, right?
I believe that.
And so what we'll need to know, and what we hope will happen at some point at Mad Bum, what needs to happen? He needs to reinvent how he pitches, right? He needs to, and is
this, because what he's doing now ain't working.
Right. Because this ain't
working.
There was a story on The Athletic today from Zach Buchanan, and he anonymously quoted a scout.
Is he the new pound for pound?
Zach Buchanan?
Yeah, you mentioned him quite a bit.
No, just because the one story he wrote today.
Joey, have you noticed that? I think we might have a new pound for pound.
Ken Summers will have something to say about that.
I think it's possible here.
I mean, Ken Summers is recovering, so you know he hasn't written in a while. He's been
okay. Just saying,
is Zach are
might be a pound.
Am I bequeathing Zach Buchanan as pound for pound the best writer in town?
I mean, you might be. You bring him up a lot.
I don't bring him up.
You do?
Today I've brought him up a lot.
In the past you have too.
He wrote a good story today. Yes, there was a couple of things to kind of pluck from it today.
He's a good writer.
You hear that, Zach? Gambo thinks that I think you're pound for pound the best writer in town.
Kent, we're going to have to send Kent some kind of notice. Kent, you've been cut. Kent, you've been released.
Poor Kent.
Poor Kent.
Poor Kent. He didn't do anything to deserve that.
Listen, he held that title for a long time, and eventually, you know, what goes up must come down.
I guess so. I guess so.
It's time for a changing of the guard at the top.
Whether he is pound for pound the best writer in town or not, he did anonymously quote a scout in his story today about Mad Bum. Quote, he's going to have to try something different. Not sure what, but I don't see it getting much better with the stuff he has now. Close quote. In the same story, Mad Bum says, I feel like I'm right there. I feel like I'm just about to cross the mountain and get to the other side in terms of the adjustments that he's made to his stuff.
Because I feel like you're right there, too, to retirement. You're right there. You're, like, right on the verge of it, man. Just retire. Like, just save the Diamondbacks the money and retire.
You know, something tells me he's not going to do that.
I'm going to walk away from $79 million?
He's got to reinvent himself. Is he capable? We'll find out. Because that's really the only question that matters at this point. Everything else is, you know, what are they going to do with them? Well, what can they do with them? Not a whole lot.
Not a whole lot. You could come up with the phantom injury and put them on the IL and hope that, you know, some time off and film session and work on things. You're not going to send him to the minors. You're not going to cut him with 3+ years left on his contract. Consider this whole year. So that's not going to happen. You're going to continue to try to work to get him right. And if it's not this year, then it's net. You could eventually end up eating that contract, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do. But you're more likely to do that with maybe 1 or 2 years left, not with 4 years left.
That's years down the road. So the answer to the question, it's not. What are you going to do about Madison Bumgarner? That question is irrelevant. There's not much you can do with Madison Bumgarner. The question is, can he reinvent his stuff? Can he, like Zach Greinke, can he figure out a different way to pitch with what he's got? Because that's the only way that investment is even going to come close to paying off for the Arizona Diamondbacks.
I don't know. I mean, there's a reason the Giants walked away from him. There's a reason nobody else wanted to give him $100 million. He, you know, for a pitcher of that caliber, a 5-year, $85 million deal seemed like a bargain, but sometimes you get what you pay for. And, you know, right now, I mean, he's worse this year than he was last year. And that's hard to believe that he's worse this year. I want him to pitch well. I would hate for this to be and I called it an albatross contract that when we did the show Bigley Murata, but that's what it's looking like right now. Yeah. It's looking like one of those contracts that you're just going to have major regret over.
Special Wednesday edition of the Big Red Rage is coming up next. Calvisi and Wolf will talk to Cardinals director player personnel Drew Grigson. He'll be on the show tonight. So if Cardinals football is what you're looking for, Cardinals football is what you're going to get with the Big Red Rage on a special Wednesday edition coming up next. That's going to do it for us. We're out of here. We'll see you tomorrow. It's straight up 2 o'clock here on the Burns and Gambo show.
Have a great night, everyone.